Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, well, I always knew I had a talent.
Jay, you have between 2 and 3 octaves of suspicion.
It was pretty high. I had trouble picking up on the end of it. I'm going to have to like consult with my dog.
Now, when it comes to getting to those higher octaves, it has a lot to do with your breathing. Sorry. I was exhaling.
As long as you don't inhale, Pod, I think that's what gets you in trouble. Mm.
Well, it could be because I was completely knackered from mowing the lawn earlier today.
Isn't that the point of having children, to make them go do things like that?
Exactly. Surely they eat grass.
All right, let's get to preseason week 2.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to a not fantasy edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader. I'm joined by 3 super fans here today, and we're going to give you the full preview of all the preseason games, much like we did last week. We'll run through the schedule of preseason games Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I'll make sure there are time markers for you in our show notes. So if you are listening to the show, perhaps on Friday after the Thursday games, and you don't want to listen to what we were watching for in the Thursday games, you can skip right ahead to the Friday games. Same for Saturday. So we'll make sure we do that in each of our preview shows as we move forward towards the regular season. Let me bring in the super fans that are on the show today. Our Thursday regular, Neil, our Scotsman who represents the Washington Redskins. Hello, Neil.
Hi, Jay. Hi, guys. Jay, it may not be fantasy, it may be real, but being on with you guys is definitely living the dream.
I don't know about that, but our next 2 super fans, I don't know which one has been on Thursdays more. I'm going to guess it's Patrick, who is our New England Patriots super fan. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Pod. And week 2 of the preseason is fantasy, just to let you know.
It's certainly not real football. And our third super fan joining us today is James, our Texan super fan. You definitely heard a lot of him over the last month, but I don't know if you've been a Thursday regular quite yet, James.
I don't like to be labeled, Pod. I'm an outsider, so we'll keep the regular status off the table for right now.
Before we jump into the game previews for the preseason week 2, I do want to remind you that you can go back and listen to a very special edition of this podcast. It was posted, as a matter of fact, just yesterday. We're recording this on Thursday. On Wednesday, the 17th, the 2nd annual Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Expert League draft occurred, and we posted that podcast as part of the Next Fan Up because I am representing this particular show as our fantasy expert. Basically, I pulled rank. I'm not really an expert. And so you can go in and check that out. 10 teams, all 10 shows, part of the Blog Talk Radio family, all drafting for their fantasy teams. And you're going to hear a lot of them, especially on Wednesdays, because I am very happily announcing that we are adding a 3rd show to our Next Fan Up lineup. And that will include a very special Wednesday show where I will be doing interviews with people from across the industry. So we'll keep those out of the Thursday preview shows because we realized that our Thursday shows were going quite long. So we wanted to still give you the great content from the super fans and also some of the interviews. So those will now be happening on Wednesdays, and you'll hear many of the people that are involved in the Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Expert League during those Wednesday shows, because I'll interview my weekly opponent on that particular program. And of course, we want to hear from you. So send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. We want you to tweet at us at NFU Podcast. And of course, facebook.com, where all of our super fans have written up what they're watching for during the preseason. So go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast and you can check out what your super fan for your favorite team has said about the games. And with that, we shall begin week two of the National Football League's preseason 2016. And Neil, that game was assigned to you, the Philadelphia Eagles at the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Thanks, Jay. Yeah, Philadelphia, they are coming off a win last week in their first preseason game. Of course, the scores aren't so important to who wins or loses, but of course, each team likes to have a little bit of confidence, seeing that some of their players, some of the way they're playing is looking good. So Philadelphia happy with that, but they did have the blow of losing Carson Wentz, who won't play in this game, to injury. You got a hair, I think it was a hairline fracture of the ribs, which, having had broken ribs myself and fractured ribs, it's going to be very difficult to throw the ball for a while, I would imagine. It's a bit of a nippy sweetie, that one. In terms of who's on the field, well, I think Eagles fans are going to be looking forward to seeing Dorial Green-Beckham, who joined them in a trade this week from the Tennessee Titans. Not sure we can expect a lot from Dorial Green-Beckham. He may be called Beckham and a wide receiver in the NFC East, but I think he's a long way away from the other Beckham in the NFC East. He's a guy who just couldn't get the playbook down. And speaking to a friend of the show, Eagles fan Mark Sicko, he was very keen to see how Beckham's going to be looking. He might not even get on the field, but certainly a boost, he thinks, to their wide receiving core. And really, the other major thing for the Eagles this week is going to be seeing how Bradford looks. He only played 3 snaps in last week's game, which was probably enough for most Philadelphia Eagles fans, to be honest, but he'll get a better run out this week. And that's going to be the key things for them. In terms of Pittsburgh, well, I'm going to digress a little bit, Jay. My favourite soccer team, Liverpool, who, as we all know, is the greatest soccer team in the world, they signed a player from Uruguay 2 or 3 years ago, and he had Scottish ancestry, and he is called Sebastian Coates. But in Uruguay, they tend to call him Sebastian Coates. So Greg, he also has a Coates in his team, Sammy Coates, and he was rather disappointed with Sammy Coates' performance last week. I think he had 2 fumbles, and he needs a huge improvement. And I think it left Greg quite deflated. So I really think that until he does do something on the field, and our Liverpool's Sammy Coates, Sebastian Coates, did nothing on the field and we sold him because he was rubbish. I think until Sammy Coates really does something on the field, I'm going to be calling Sammy Coates and not Sammy Coates. So let's see how Sammy Coates gets on this week. Secondly, and probably the most important thing for Greg as he watches his Steelers this week is really injuries. And I think all of us are going to be saying that repeatedly throughout this podcast. Just get through these games without major injuries. I think Pittsburgh are going to see one injured player coming back, and that's Pouncey. And he'll be a big boost to their offensive line. And Greg finishes off by telling us that using, well, just a hideous hashtag, Stairway to 7, which, rather depressing for the rest of us.
That was just completely unnecessary out of him. Going back to Coates, Neil, which, by the way, I will fully endorse the nickname. There's a lot of hope there on Sammy Coates because of Martavius Bryant's suspension. Marcus Wheaton is not a Martavius Bryant clone, but Sammy Coates plays a little bit more like Martavius Bryant. So there's a lot of hope being put on Coates to sort of fill that role. It doesn't look like he's coming along as quickly as perhaps the fans would like to see. Another item from ESPN.com's Jeremy Fowler noting that both Bell and D'Angelo Williams will sit tonight's game. Fitz Toussaint will be taking first team reps, which I also think is an interesting move by the Steelers, but not one that's totally out there. Other Steelers news, though, and this is where Patrick Siska will be heavily involved. What a surprise. The NFL has threatened discipline, including suspension, for players refusing to cooperate with the league's investigation into steroid claims made by an Al Jazeera America report. Oh, so it was all fun and games, Pat, when we were talking about Tom Brady and his balls. But now that he's going after James Harrison and Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers and Mike Neal, now it's not all that fun anymore.
It never was. And,
well, it wasn't for us, whole... no. But I'm just talking, come join the bandwagon, Steelers and Packers fans.
Man, the problem is that none of this is new. It keeps escalating with players that have longer careers, more gravitas behind their name, so people are paying attention more and more and more. And obviously, the late gate exacerbated that, for good or for evil. But, this goes back years. He pulled this nonsense to a lesser degree with it. Let me characterize what I'm saying here. But in terms of going off book and doing whatever the hell he wants, he started that with, he really started with Albert Haynesworth when he just started levying, fines and suspensions for on-field conduct. And people at that point applauded it. And yeah, I was one of them too. So I can't go back and say, I saw this coming. 10 years ago, whatever that was. But, if you go back just post CBA and you go and you look at Sean Goldson and Brandon Merriweather, he wanted to make a statement about, head contact not being tolerated within the league, so he suspended them for hits. Well, guess what? There's a fine schedule associated with that, on field conduct. So he's not in authority to do that. So both of those suspensions were overturned on appeal. He pulled it again with Ray Rice, and obviously that got some attention. He pulled it again with Adrian Peterson with his indefinite suspension. And once again, in both of those cases on appeal, they get reduced down to their appropriate scheduled penalties. He pulls it again with Bounty Gate, going after, half the Saints defense or four guys, and he levies a series of suspensions of varying degrees against them. And again, on appeal, those all get reduced down to their appropriate suspensions, which in that case was absolutely none, right? And what did Roger Goodell learn from that? He's like, well, if I try and do whatever I want, it keeps getting overturned on appeal. So I'll just eliminate that process from the problem, and I'll just have everybody appeal to me. I'll have people appeal my own decisions back to myself, right? Which is, that is what a fascist would do. It's like... I don't think the comparisons are completely out of bounds here. So Brady's like, what the double hockey sticks are you talking about? You're giving me a PED suspension for possibly knowing that somebody else did something that every physicist in North America not named Bill Nye says is impossible? Well, I don't think you can do that. A judge agrees with them. No, you can't do that. You can't make this stuff up on the fly, right? And somehow, and I don't even understand how, because there's no real opinion given in the case, failing opinion, it comes back from the Superior Appellate Court saying no, okay, he's actually authorized to do that. This is legit. So now he can just wag his finger and make declarative judgments come down based on absolutely nothing. And Harrison... gotta hate agreeing with Harrison, but he is spot on with this. Like the CBA specifically calls this out, right, as something that cannot, like doesn't hold up under scrutiny as something that he can go off book on. Like, he's not author. This does not constitute conduct detrimental because it's hearsay, right? And that's called out in the CBA. This doesn't survive. And to make matters worse, the NFL, using this exact same report, said that this report doesn't apply to Peyton Manning because it's not from credible sources. But now all of a sudden, because it's Harrison, it is credible. It's the same damn report, right? So it's like this whole thing just smacks of ambivalence and hubris. But it's terrible. If you want to talk about integrity of the game, I can't think of a single example in the entire history of the NFL where integrity of the game is jeopardized more than the way this nut job is acting.
I will just say that in terms of Peyton Manning, he did cooperate and he did have an interview regarding the report.
Which would seem incredible, right?
No, that is
if
admittedly...
If the NFL says the report's not credible, then it's not a credible source, which means that it's excluded within like the context of the CBA as being caused to test somebody or interview them for PEDs.
Well,
right.
Ultimately...
So we're ripping up the CBA here.
Well, I don't know if we're going that far yet, but I have a feeling that a court will be involved with this one as well, if there's any suspensions that are given out. I will say that what is looking to be like the when you look at the problem and you go, okay, well, Brady gets suspended because he broke his phone. So that was looked at as not cooperating with the investigation. These guys
Except
are not
what he was fined for, though, right? That's not what he was found to be guilty of.
You spoke a lot there. No, sit down. It's okay. Relax.
I am not ESPN. When somebody says something that's factually incorrect, I feel the need to jump in and correct it right away, not wait a year and a half.
Literally, I'm just looking at the commonalities between what's going on here. And it seems that if you do not cooperate when the commissioner says jump and you do not jump, the commissioner gets mad and he suspends you. And so these guys were asked for an interview, whether or not the report was substantiated or not. And because they have refused or have not responded to the request for the interview, the NFL now feels that they can suspend them. The suspensions will begin on Friday, August 26th, and will continue until he has fully participated in an interview with league investigators, after which the commissioner will determine whether and when the suspension should be lifted. Again, like I said, this was all fun and games when it had to do with Tom Brady and deflated footballs. And as Patrick said, scientists have proven that what happened was all within the nature of science. However, now we have the commissioner saying, you will jump when I say so. And the NFLPA is pushing back. And ultimately, because there is a CBA, what I'm hearing is that this isn't going to be solved until the CBA is over. And we know that that's not for another few years still down the road.
There's one. Can I just say one thing, Jay? And that is that. I mean, I don't want to get into a discussion about Tom Brady, oxygen thief, and this particular case. I think that's two different things. But I think the worry here for the Players Association, and I think it's a very valid worry, is around anybody just making an unsubstantiated claim now. Like, you know, Patrick could go in and say he saw Tom Brady injecting himself with steroids. And the way this case is going at the moment, that would mean some sort of similar situation arising where Tom Brady would have to answer questions to it. And that would apply to any player across the league. And I think that's a very dangerous thing for the players to start agreeing to. I can see it with Manning because he was retired or about to retire. So he did his interview and off he went. I think for current players, very dangerous if they start sitting down and doing interviews over unsubstantiated claims.
Yeah, the thing with them sitting down to an interview is you're only going to incriminate yourself at this point. Like, Goodell is looking for a reason to suspend them, and by not saying anything, they're not going to give them a reason. I mean, Al Jazeera America is now a defunct news organization. The person who wrote the original story for Al Jazeera America recanted the story, so it would be even more than just having somebody like Patrick say they saw a player do this. It would be Patrick saying, well, I think I saw them do this, but I'm not sure. When questioned about it, he goes, no, they definitely didn't do that. And then our podcast getting shut down and having those claims be used against a player.
Or like the referee saying, well, no, actually, this is the gauge that I used. And the NFL saying, well, we're going to completely disregard your memory of this because we're not done
quote unquote investigating. So we're going to keep looking for another year. We're going to roll back the clock and look 6 months further and grasp any piece of data that could be possibly construed in the way that we see favorable and call that evidence and proof. Right? Like, it's nonsensical.
I think that's fair enough. But I think the point I'm also trying to make would be that any Tom, Dick and Harry on the street could go and try and blackmail a player and say, look, if you don't give me 50 grand, I'm going to just go and say that I saw you do this. When we were dating, you did this. And I think that's a very dangerous ground for players.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I think that comes from Harrison. I think he said exactly that. I remember Tom, Dick and Harry references. That's called legitimate and true. And these are the reasons why there's, among other things, these are the reasons why there are scheduled procedures within the CBA. People keep talking about Article 46. Article 46 doesn't say Roger Goodell gets to do whatever the hell he wants. Article 46 goes through the process of being penalized for on-the-field behavior, off-the-field behavior. It fined what the fine schedule is, which is in an appendix, and you know the processes for going through an appeals, process. All of that's lined out in there, right? And that Goodell has decided to just completely abandon that process means that the NFL is in clear violation of their CBA, and that's why the players are pissed and scared, and they should be, right? Like, when I say they're tearing up the CBA, that's what I'm talking about. There's no protection for players anymore because what was negotiated is not being followed.
What Goodell is doing is he's moving away from the PED policy, which this should probably come under, to the conduct policy.
Because he's been given broader latitude there through a very, absolutely, very deliberate misinterpretation, frankly.
It's all very interesting. Some of the inner workings going on right now and the politics going on in the NFL. I mean, we're talking about a $1 billion industry, and a lot of the power. A lot of the power has been put in one man's hands, and perhaps that power is going to his head. Speaking of power,
The contract with ESPN alone is worth $2.5 billion. Like that's not even considering the other networks.
So you're correct. I should say multi-billion industry.
Yeah, and we should also consider our news sources. Feel free to bleep that out and post if you want to. But when you have a $2.5 billion contract with the NFL, that might skew your reporting of the issues a little bit.
All right. Speaking of power, I have the power to make this show move on, and thus we shall, to the second game on the preseason schedule. And by the way, that's pretty much the biggest story of the week, which is why we spent so much time on it. But James, Cincinnati is at Detroit.
Yes, they are. And from our other super fan across the pond, Simon, he will be looking at the young receivers. This will be their first test away from home, and they won't have the benefit of having practiced against Detroit all week, unlike last week where they were able to practice against Minnesota in the lead up to the game. He's also very curious on how the D-line plays. Geno Atkins was an absolute beast last week, and Marcus Hardison showed some flashes, but he's hoping that this D-line group can show some significant improvement. As for Detroit, there was no write-up, so I'm just going to make some things up as we go.
Shame.
Marvin Jones is going to have a nice revenge game, potentially, against Cincinnati, and I feel that Detroit is going to go out paper bag shopping to try and find that perfect accessory for Sunday.
Wow. I think they shoplift the paper bags in Detroit.
I will add Michael Rothstein's report from ESPN. By the way, we do fall back on ESPN quite a bit, but they're kind enough to give us so many reports. We do expect to see a lot more of the Detroit starters in the game against the Bengals. More important for the backups, obviously. So be watching Dwayne Washington and wide receiver Quinshad Davis for the Lions. At least that's what Michael is watching for in tonight's game. So some good stuff there. Patrick, our team is hosting those feisty Chicago Bears. I call them feisty because they've had joint practices this week, and it seems like there were fights at least two of the three practices.
Yeah, I think three in total. John Fox will come out and say, well, those weren't really fights. Just, you know, probably accurate. I don't know. I wasn't there. But he has a different standard for on-field conflict than Bill Belichick does. But that's cool. So let's look at the Bears' concerns first, since they're the visiting team. This comes from Chicago Tom, you know, our Bears contributor. His primary concern is the offensive line. He has a long, eloquent passage about his concerns about their offensive line, but basically they're garbage. And, you know, their starting center at this point is Ted Larson, who I think was a Patriots practice squad guy a couple of years ago that might have been called up once or twice. So it's like they're kind of in rough shape there, especially in the middle. He's also concerned about their defensive backs. He says that the front seven gets pretty good pressure, but it doesn't matter because the receivers are open, the quarterback can just dump off. So it negates the actual positive thing that's going on with their defense. Jay Cutler is looking skittish. And if he's wondering if that's because Adam Gase is left, it's a new offense now. He says that historically you don't want a skittish Jay Cutler. He starts doing bad things, like diving on the ground and throwing the ball away or throwing picks. And he's interested in looking at some key rookies, so Leonard Floyd and Cody Whitehair. He's also listing Kevin White as a quasi-rookie, which I think is legitimate. And I know from listening to coverage of the Patriots practices, the joint practices, that Kevin White has been a problem for the Patriots. The size and speed of their receivers in general has been a problem for the Patriots. So it will be interesting to see how this works out. Like, does the Patriots' pretty good front seven overpower the relatively weak offensive line of the Bears and make skittish Jay Cutler throw into coverage? I mean, I'll be looking for that. I hope so. On the Patriots side of the ball, how's Jimmy G progressing? We're going to talk about that pretty much every week, you know, from now until October. It's going to be a recurring theme. Wide receiver depth is really interesting for me right now. We have Edelman and Amendola. Are they going to play tonight? Like, I don't know, maybe. But there's a long list of guys behind them that, probably not the case with Edelman, but Amendola, he might actually be concerned about his job at this point. Malcolm Mitchell's, he was really impressive to me last week. And we have a bunch of other guys that are in the mix as well. Amendola, he's renegotiated his salary like two or three times, but he still makes $3.5 million this year. I'm sorry, makes five. There's $3.5 million in cap savings if they cut him. It's tricky because he is the Edelman backup and Edelman gets hurt a lot. And, he's also our punt return guy. If our rookie doesn't work out and Jones keeps dropping the ball in practice anyway, so maybe you don't want to let Edelman go, but maybe you don't want to keep him for $3.5 million either. Is Bennett going to get just killed tonight? Like, that might happen. Two of those three fights were the Bears trying to beat up, Bennett because he ran his mouth a lot on his way out of town. I like Bennett, but if Bennett knew me in real life, he'd probably run his mouth about me too, and then maybe I wouldn't like him so much. So, is he going to get, a cheap shot or two tonight? He very well could. On the defensive side of the ball, our defensive side of the ball, defensive line, is Sheard hurt? Like, that's going to be a problem if both Sheard and Ninkovich are legitimately injured. If so, is Flowers going to come in and play for him? Like, is he going to start? Because that'd be an interesting jump from last year, and he's definitely been a developmental prospect that a lot of people have been having their eye on around here, but it'd be a pretty big jump to come in and start for the team. Linebacker, I want to see Greer Hill. I'm intrigued because he's a 220-pound linebacker that just flies around and hits people, and that's fun to watch, especially in the preseason, like when we're not really dealing with complex schemes. It's height, weight, speed guys out there. And he's projected to be a core special teamer, but it looks like he can actually fly around and make some tackles. It'd be fun to watch him too. Defensive backs, similar to the wide receiver situation, we have a lot of mid-level guys. And how are they going to match up size-wise against those Bears receivers? that, I mean, it's only a preseason game, but, you know, we're in a division with some decently sized wide receivers. I'm thinking specifically of the Jets. So if these guys have trouble matching up the size, it's not something I'm particularly happy to see. That's it.
All right. Just quickly notes that I'll be watching in the Patriots. That offensive line certainly was the cause of a lot of the troubles Garoppolo and Brissett encountered last week. You mentioned wide receivers. Malcolm Mitchell does look promising. Had that dislocated elbow. He has been practicing, which is good to see, but interesting to see.
He's been at practice, but not practicing, as misreported.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I think he is going to provide some depth behind those receivers that you mentioned earlier. That said, most of the completions that I saw from Garoppolo and Brissett were to the tight ends, whether it was Bennett or AJ Derby.
Derby's also interesting.
He is a very interesting player because he's sort of he's a receiving tight end, not really much of a blocker type guy. It's like a slower, maybe a better description would be a slower wide receiver.
There you go. Well, how does he match up against Clay Harbor, right? Who you just paid a lot of money to, who right. I don't remember seeing anything from last week. I'm not even sure if he played.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen much of Clay Harbor at all, including at practice. So it's the tight end battle will be interesting to watch, especially since it seems those are the only guys the quarterbacks have enough time to target. And then the last thing that I will be watching for in this particular game will be the special teams, because it does look like the Patriots have some work to do on the special teams. And I don't think it was just because Nate Ebner wasn't on the field. I don't think Nate Ebner is necessarily the cog that makes the Patriots special teams run. I think there's an actual deficiency in the Patriots special teams. And that is, ladies and gentlemen, our special teams mention of the week. Next up on the preseason schedule, we have the Atlanta Falcons at the Cleveland Browns. Neil?
Yeah, Atlanta coming off a win against Washington last week. They played okay in terms of the second and third stringers. The first team didn't do very much against Washington's defense. And likewise, the defense didn't do much against Washington's offense. So they'll be looking for improvements there. Tim, our Atlanta superfan, he is really looking forward to seeing the pass rush and also to see if Aldrick Robinson, who actually was once upon a time a Washington player and had 100 yards receiving last week against Washington, looking to see if he can do a repeat performance. There were some encouraging signs from their young linebackers, Devondre Campbell and Deion Jones, see if that can continue this week. And I think all Atlanta fans will be looking forward to seeing their first-round pick, recovered from his trunk injury, Keanu Neal. He'll be getting his first plays, first snaps as an Atlanta Falcon, and that's something for them all to look forward to. In terms
By
of
the
Cleveland,
way, I just want to let everyone know that you said trunk and not junk injury.
I heard trunk. I don't know about you other guys.
Maybe I didn't have
that problem, Pod.
Maybe they just say trunk, and maybe he's just boasting. But in terms of Cleveland, let me just say this out loud for you. Cleveland Browns are favorites in this game. I know it's only preseason, but when was the last time Cleveland were favorites for anything, apart from the first round, the first overall pick?
Real quickly before you move on there, I wouldn't put it beyond you, Jackson, to actually play to win this game, because I'm not a big fan of Hugh Jackson as a head coach. All right, moving on.
No, I quite like Hugh Jackson. Interestingly, our Cleveland Browns superfan would quite like to see last year's first-round pick Danny Shelton benched and give Jamie Mader a go there on a defensive line. Interesting one for me, that one. I thought Shelton did not too badly last year, but maybe he's having a poor camp. running back consistency. They quite like the look of Terrell Watson, and they want to see what he can do. He shows a good combination of size and speed, and some promising signs there from the rookie. And Cleveland are hoping to see Joe Hayden, Corey Coleman, and Josh Gordon all in the field in the same game. So not quite sure if Gordon's back actually available to play, but that would be good news for Cleveland all round. I think, and as a Washington fan, I probably just keep half an eye on RG3, see how he does. He had a very typical RG3 game last week, threw a beautiful deep pass, then looked inconsistent, inaccurate, and he threw an interception. I think he also fumbled as well. So we'll see what RG3 can do, but maybe some steady progress there for him would be a good thing.
All right, James, next up on the schedule are the Raiders at the Green Bay Packers.
Yes, and so Monty, as always, has done a very good job of writing up the Oakland side of things, which is available on our Facebook page. I'm going to pick some of the highlights there. But for the Raiders, their rookie Shalique Calhoun and Corey James should see some more snaps with injuries to other Raiders. Monty's also looking forward to the AC/DC combo getting in sync and taking some shots deep down the field. Interesting quote from Derek Carr about how he takes every game seriously and all he does is try and go out there and win, including in these preseason games. So he was a little disappointed that he only got to play about 10 snaps in the previous game. So look for him to get a couple extra snaps here in game two. The other thing Monty is focused on are the roles of the backups, specifically at quarterback and running back. You've got Matt McGloin versus Connor Cook, for those that don't know the Raider depth chart. And right now, McGloin has the slight edge being what we'll call a veteran versus Connor Cook, who should be the long-term solution at backup for the Raiders. DeAndre Washington versus George Atkins III for backup running back. That'll be a nice battle. Both of them looked really good in the first week. And both have the potential to dip into the carries of Latavius Murray, not just here in the preseason, but going forward in the regular season, whether he needs a break or just as a change of pace. He's thinking that the Raiders are going to roll the Green Bay Packers, but he doesn't believe that a big loss or a big blowout loss would be the worst thing, given all the good publicity, all the bandwagoning by the media, by Jay, almost, as it were, to try and throw some people off the scent of Oakland and to give them a taste of the real world prior to the regular season starting. There are 7 wide receivers on the depth chart right now, so there's going to have to be some differentiation there as roster cuts come up. And some other things that might dictate how the roster is formed is they're expecting to do a lot of defensive shifts going from 4-3 to 3-4 to generate pressure on the quarterback. And so this might force them to carry a couple extra linebackers. Green Bay tight end should have should cause some havoc for Oakland. Even though they have a slight improvement to their linebacking core, it needs to improve pretty substantially for it to make a difference. And then there's also going to be a shakeup at safety, given how Dewey McDonald struggled in preseason game one. Now, our Green Bay Packers superfan Brian isn't expecting the starters to play too much. I'm guessing that the whole organization is still a little gun shy after the Jordy Nelson incident last year. So the starters should only get a series or two. They're going to be Brian will be focused on Brett Hundley, who was a preseason star last year and has had a lot of good reports coming out of training camp. And also he liked what he saw last week from the run game and hopes that this continues. Finally, the second round pick, Jason Spriggs, is getting some good press and how he may even be a slight upgrade over Bakhtiari. And so he'll be keeping a close eye on him.
Speaking of Jordy Nelson, he was activated from the PUP just yesterday, Wednesday. So that's good news for them. Interesting on the timing of his reactivation. As you mentioned, this was the game he went down last season with the ACL. So, yes, there you go. Green Bay Packers. Last game on Thursday evening, Patrick, is the Minnesota Vikings. I hate them. I don't know why. I just do. At the Seattle Seahawks.
I don't like their comportment. So, Davey, our Viking super fan. Yeah, I love the brevity of Davey. So, his biggest concern by far is their offensive line, which seems to be a recurring theme in, like, pretty much every team this offseason for some weird reason. You know, can Sullivan stay healthy? Who's going to be the right tackle? Those are his big questions. Development of wide receiver, I'd be pretty concerned about that if I were him too, because the top of their depth chart looks pretty young. And he wants to see if they can get off the line. And, like, not being a huge fan, I'm just going off my mental model. I think they have, like a big receiving core. It's odd that they can't get off the line. His defensive line, he loves their defense. He says they're awesome, other than their, if I can clean this up, their poo-poo run defense. and he doesn't want anybody getting hurt. He doesn't care about the score, and he doesn't want anybody going in. He doesn't want it going into overtime. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's good. Seahawks. So our Seahawks superfan Justin is interested in seeing, you know, depth and rotational players in at running back. I am too, for whatever that's worth. CJ Procise in particular. Justin saying that he's the favorite to win the third down back job. He wants to see if they can pick up the. If he can pick up blocking assignments, I think that's really important too, because he doesn't mention it, but their offensive line is also really hot garbage. He talks about Jaron Reed. This is his going to be his first action along with CJ Procise. Big defensive tackle, run stuffer. He thinks this will be an interesting test for him going up against Minnesota, who loves to run the ball. I agree, provided that Minnesota is not trying to test out their receivers tonight and throwing the ball around a lot in a game that doesn't matter. And the backup quarterback situation, he's got Boykin, who's a reasonably athletic guy, it seems. I haven't watched the snap, so I'm just going off of what Justin says. And Heaps, who's more of your classic pocket passer that doesn't really do anything to impress you but seems to control the offense reasonably well. He wants to see who's going to win out that battle here in the preseason. Something tells me that if that's the case and you have an athletic guy and you have a pocket passer, you don't find it out in the preseason. You find that out when your quarterback actually goes down and you need to figure out if it's in game, if you need somebody to try and pull something out of a hat, then you put in the athletic guy. If you're looking for somebody to take over range of the offense, you go with the conservative guy. But Vikings at Seahawks.
Nice. One more note I'll add to the Seahawks before we move on to the Friday games. Again, ESPN Shield Capadia. I'm sure I totally mangled that name. Sorry to the Capadias. Russell Wilson watching Christian Michael in his second stint with the Seahawks. Thomas Rawls sitting out, so Michael will get the chance to run with the ones. The running back situation in Seattle is an interesting one, as Beast Mode has retired. Most believe Thomas Rawls would be the heir apparent, but from a lot of things that I've read, that doesn't seem to be necessarily the case. So watching Mr. Michael, who misspells his first name, or at least his parents did, will be fun to watch. All right, moving on to the Friday games. Neil, it's your team hosting the New York Jets, who I hate, and I hate with a passion.
Well, don't worry. Don't worry, Jay. We're going to give them a right smashing this week, so you'll be happy come the end of that game. For the Jets, they're going to be quite excited to see a couple of young wide receivers playing, Jalen Marshall and Caron Peak. Hopefully it won't be too confusing for those rather dim Jets. And the other big issue for the Jets is Dee Milliner's play. I think he was a 9th overall pick for the Jets a couple of years ago and never lived up to that billing. But there were some positives moving forward, I think, from last week's game, where he did give up a couple of big plays to Allen Robinson, but who doesn't these days? But otherwise, he played quite well. So maybe some positive signs there from that high pick.
And it's going to be an excellent dime back.
The other bit of news for the Jets fans, they'll be keeping an eye on Christian Hackenberg, who is quite likely to get his first few plays of the year at quarterback, and we'll see how his accuracy in that looks. And lastly, for the Jets, they could possibly see a few plays from Matt Forte, who's coming back, big free agent signing, of course, coming back from a hamstring injury, and he might be fit enough to get a few snaps. So that'll be a good thing for the Jets. I still rate him. I think he's a really, really good player. Really underrated player. And what for Washington? Well, pretty much keep it short for Washington, because they don't have a lot of camp battles still going on. Still pretty much what we talked about last week. But the key for us is going to be just run the ball. Anybody. Just get even a Washington fan from the crowd. Get them on the field, see if he can run the ball, because we just cannot move it an inch in the running game. So big night for Matt Jones, Keith Marshall, and the offensive line going against a tough Jets offensive line. But I want to see these starters run the ball a little bit. That's the key thing for our week.
Real quickly on the Jets, just don't forget Christian Hackenberg, loved by John Gruden. Remember, John Gruden said he'd be surprised if Hackenberg made it out of the first round. And I mentioned that's why he's on TV and not coaching on a sideline anymore. Also,
name one quarterback that John Gruden does not, John Gruden doesn't just love.
Yeah, he loves them all. Of course he does. And Matt Forte, you'll hear me on the Blog Talk Radio Expert League draft. He ended up on my team. I drafted him. I believe Forte is the forgotten running back in fantasy this year. Now, a lot of that is people are afraid that he might be done. A lot of that is some of the injuries. He's just gotten onto the practice field with the Jets. So we have to wait and see. I still think Forte is nowhere near done, and I think that was the signing of the offseason, or at least one of the signings this offseason. I think Forte is going to be a big boom for the Jets, who are still going to lose the first seven games of the season because their schedule is horrendous. All right. Miami is at the Dallas Cowboys. James, that's you. Before you jump into that game, just want to mention, as we were on ESPN.com, came across an article written by Aaron Schatz for the ESPN Insider, talking about the most likely teams, worst to first, and the Dallas Cowboys lead the list. That might be low-hanging fruit, considering the division that they're in and how much they actually need to improve to win that division, but still. I think it's an interesting article to go and check out.
Well, I'm glad that your one note wasn't just how much you hated the Miami Dolphins. That would have been three straight games proclaiming hate for one team or the other.
Well, I don't really hate the Dolphins. I didn't grow up during the time where the Dolphins were a hated rival of the New England Patriots. I feel more sorry for the Dolphins, much like when we get to the Buffalo Bills, how sorry I feel for them.
Well, I mean, most people under the age of 60 haven't grown up in an era where the Dolphins were serious competitors.
Bah,
yeah, and then you add in the Mecco Grimes factor, and it's just the sympathy level goes through the roof.
All right, let's talk about the game, Cowboys and Dolphins.
All right. Well, poor Ron. So the Dolphins superfan is all too familiar with the sight of a struggling offense. And this year's offensive line is looking to take that mantle and continue a very fine tradition. However, that is going to give their first round pick, Laremy Tunsil, a chance to make his first start in the NFL, which should be good. She's projected to start at left guard right now. And
Oh, sorry. I was exhaling.
As long as you don't inhale, Pod, I think that's what gets you in trouble. Mm. So the starter should see a few more reps this week than what they did last week, just because of how kind of bad Tannehill, or uncomfortable, we'll say, Tannehill looked in the pocket. So on defense, Ron is looking to see a lot of playing time for the projected starters, which is something that wasn't seen last week. The defensive line will get a good test against the best O-line in football, but the big area of improvement will need to be in finishing tackles. Miami let up a lot of big plays last week and just seemed to carry over the poor tackling strategies that the Joe Philbin era ushered in several years ago. As for Dallas, it's all about the quarterbacks in the superfan's mind. Even Romo's brief appearance in the game is going to go a long way to settling down the Dallas faithful and should get them excited for this season. I'm sure everybody knows the stat about how the Dallas Cowboys were winless in games that Tony Romo did not start last year. So it'll obviously be good to get Romo back in, and then hopefully Dak Prescott can lock up the backup role with another fine performance or a similar performance to what he had in week one. And then Chaz Green needs to get a few more reps in to look comfortable to be a good swing tackle for them. Other than that, there was a good quote by Jason Garrett that had me laughing. The part that I liked was, it's a privilege to wake up in the morning and coach these guys because of the approach they take. And for as much fire Jason Garrett has come in and how little control over the team he seems to have down there in Jerry World, I think he could have just stopped and said, it's a privilege to wake up in the morning and still be the coach. That's something that a lot of people would not have projected him being able to say this year.
I think it's a fair point. Does anybody know the story of why the Cowboys have their training camp in California and not in Texas? I don't know if I've ever heard that story, or maybe I have and I've forgotten it because I really don't care that much about the Dallas Cowboys.
I'm willing to go out on a very... Yeah, there you go, Neil. I was going to say I'll go out on a very thick limb and say that's how Jerry Jones makes the most money.
Yeah, it's interesting, for sure. Let's go to the... Yes, Neil.
Can I just throw in a question there while we're on the Dallas Cowboys? Interesting story about Jerry Jones being nominated as a Hall of Fame inductee. Not for me. What about you guys? And wouldn't your New England guy get in first before him, I would have thought?
I was going to say too soon. That would be my only thing. I do think Jerry Jones and even Robert Kraft will eventually be Hall of Famers along the same lines as, you know, we just had Eddie DeBartolo go in. Mm-hmm. I just think it's way too soon to be talking Hall of Fame for either of those two guys.
Other than George Halas, I can't think of a more famous owner, and it's the Hall of Fame. So, yeah, put him in.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably fewer owners or very few owners that have grown the revenue of the league, which at the end of the day is all they aspire to be since they are a business. So, I mean, he'll make it in, but that kind of brings up the question of whether owners should be getting in the first place.
Man,
yeah, it's pretty self-aggrandizing, but, you know, they don't own the Hall of Fame. So I guess it's not technically them that puts themselves in. Although when you pay for the field and name it after yourself, I guess that
might be the only way that Benson ends up in the Hall of Fame. So,
yeah.
Patrick, let's wrap up the Friday games here. The Arizona Cardinals at the San Diego Chargers.
Dr. Jones, our Cardinals fan, he's primarily concerned with DJ Humphries. Brandon Williams too, but DJ Humphries in particular. He wants to see how he matches up against Melvin Ingram. It's a bit of a trial by fire, but he thinks it's important enough to pay primary attention to that. He wants to know if Chandler Jones is going to get some snaps. I keep trying to tell people, don't think Chandler Jones is like the next, you know, Reggie White. He's not. He's good, but he's not that good.
Plus his brothers, by the way, not to go unnoticed, both of his brothers have been cited for PED use. I would say if one brother had it, then not a trend. But the fact that two did, and the fact that the Patriots traded the guy away, I have my suspicions.
Well, maybe. I mean, it's not like it's hereditary. It's not diabetes, right? It's steroid use.
And I would say, Jay,
athletes.
Jay, you have between 2 and 3 octaves of suspicion.
It was pretty high. I had trouble picking up on the end of it. I'm going to have to like consult with my dog and figure out if you heard what you were saying. Moving past Chandler Jones and or baseless accusations from third rate media outlets.
We're third rate.
Another thing.
I think that's a promotion.
Fair enough.
we're still around, unlike Al Jazeera America.
That's true. That's true. Dr. Jones wants to know who his center is. You know, Arian says it's A.Q. Shipley. Well, Arians hasn't been around lately, so maybe it's Evan Boehm. They'll find out. He wants to know if Robert Kinemgichi is going to be able to practice or not. He wants him to go nuts. And he's very, very, very concerned about their special teams. Again, some colorful language about how terrible they were in terms of missing field goals, fumbling, not maintaining their lane integrity, just really bad fundamental stuff on special teams. Meanwhile, we have the young member of our group, I think, is Chargers Superfan our youngest guy?
I don't know anyway. That. I know Neil is our oldest.
Oh, is he? Hey. Really?
How old are you, Neil?
Old enough.
No, start impacting our demographics. Yeah, now that Ravens Rex is gone, you might be the oldest. So anyway, Chargers. Terrell Williams was hurt, so he wants to see if, you know, he can actually get to play. He wants to see Hunter Henry improve. I do too. I'm kind of curious about the future of tight end in San Diego. He wants more Melvin Gordon. Let's see how he plays against good defense before we get too excited. And any improvement on their defense would be great because they're also terrible. No explicatives here. There probably should be. They're really, really bad.
Just a quick note. Bruce Arians, you mentioned, hasn't been around lately. That's because he suffered a bout of diverticulitis, which, by the way, when you say suffered a bout, my father-in-law almost died from diverticulitis. So it's not exactly the nicest thing in the world to get. It's obviously extremely painful and has to do with your guts. I'll just put it that way.
Right.
A huge slate of Saturday games and none on Sunday. I'm guessing this is because the Olympics end on Sunday. So we begin once again with you, Neil, the Carolina Panthers at the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, really quick here, Jay. We only have some updates really from Carolina from Jimmy. So he's really looking forward to seeing more progression from the young cornerbacks they have, James Bradbury, Darrell and Zach Sanchez. I think Bradbury is really standing out in camp, looked good last week, so all positive news there. In terms of wide receivers, a lot of talk, of course, about Kevin Benjamin coming back, but Jimmy's really, really keen on Devin Funchess, who apparently is having an outstanding camp and has made a huge steps from last year. So we'll see if he can translate that onto the field. And finally, he again is talking about the health of his players. He just wants guys to get through. Personally, I'm looking forward to seeing the young linebacker Thompson play, to see him play alongside Kuechly and Davis. That could be an outstanding linebacker trio heading into this year, possibly the best in the league. And for Tennessee, although we don't have a preview here, I can tell you that Kevin Dodd, the first round pick, he won't play with still with his foot injury, but he's back in camp and getting him the season. Hopefully he'll have enough time to get there. And maybe just an interesting one to watch in the game is fifth round wide receiver Tarjay Sharp, who is actually nailing down, he's a fifth round pick, and nailing down a starting wide receiver position. So clearly maybe one of the reasons why they felt it was fine to let Dorial Green-Beckham go, seeing a fifth rounder come in and grab a starting spot. It's good news for them.
Well, the other interesting thing that I'll note here, and this comes from Paul Kaharski at ESPN, last week the Titans rushed for 288 yards in their preseason game against the Chargers. Forecast right now has rain for the game in Carolina. So we might be seeing a lot more of that running game by the Titans once again. I don't know if that necessarily helps your fifth round pick unless he's really blocking a lot. And that could be an advantage for him. But a good running game always helps a young quarterback. That is for sure. Next up, James, it's the New York Giants, who I absolutely despise, and the Buffalo Bills, who I I feel so bad for Buffalo because they try so hard. They really do. They really go out there and they give it their all, and yet they keep getting suspensions. They keep getting injuries. This was a playoffs or bust year for Rex Ryan, and I just don't see it. Marcel Darius suspended with a drug suspension for four games. Buffalo just cannot buy a break.
Well, when you have Marcel Darius on your team, you assume that risk. it's not like a choir boy just got busted. It's all right. This is a James game. I'll back off.
No, I mean, you guys are hitting all the high points from the Buffalo Bills Robert preview here. We'll start with the visiting Giants, though. Sam is excited to see if they have a real middle linebacker in Jonathan Casillas. He had one interception last week and should have had a second, but landed a little bit out of bounds. So I guess we can debate on whether he should have had that or not. There's a reason they're linebackers and not wide receivers, right? Darian Thompson at free safety is another spot that will go a long way to improving the Giants, since not only would they get a better free safety, but it'll allow Landon Collins to move down into the box for more run support, as well as provide some more flexibility in their personnel packages. So that moves us on to Robert's preview. And for the Bills, the question is, who will be the number three receiver? So far, none of those have been suspended, which is a good move in the right direction. They did release Hankerson already, and the only player to make a few plays last week was somebody named Walt Powell, who wasn't projected to make the initial roster when the preseason started. The defense needs to stay healthy and not suspended and show up for their drug tests. Currently, they are looking at starting either a special teamer, someone who they just signed, or a street fighter as their number two outside linebacker. That probably isn't going to work out too well. The D-line needs to show some depth given the recent suspension, as we mentioned, to Marcel Darius.
Well, you know, good luck, Buffalo. I have a feeling Rex Ryan will not have his job next year. I don't think this gives him a pass. It shouldn't give him a pass. I don't know.
Not his fault.
I suppose not.
I mean, he's not head of personnel, is he?
No, but still, I don't know. Honestly, Buffalo has tried to rebuild for how many years now, and they just can't seem to get it right.
Like since the glory days of Bryce Pop.
Yeah, pretty much. So I don't know what they can do that can change their outcome, but other than waiting for Brady to retire. I think there's going to be more than just that's going to lead to their ultimate success. Speaking of two more teams that I just absolutely love to hate, it's the Baltimore Ravens and Indianapolis Colts, and I'm sure Patrick feels fairly similar.
I don't like these teams at all for lots of different reasons. The reasons aren't that different, but it's funny because they used to be the same team. Let's leave that aside. Let's talk about what the super fans wrote in. So for the Ravens, running back battle. So we have Forsett, Terrence West, and Buck Allen all vying for touches. That's pretty interesting, especially if you're like most people and you only watch, you know, the second preseason game for deep fantasy sleepers. There's some activity to watch there. Wide receiver injuries I'm interested in. They have the ancient Steve Smith and the young but fragile Breshad Perriman. Are these guys actually going to be able to play?
Steve Smith, by the way, will be activated off the PUP. Breshad Perriman Jameson Hensley says unlikely to start before the regular season.
Yeah, and again, like, I just say good. Like keep bringing on the hate for the Ravens and make things hard for them. I'm pro that. Third bullet point. This I thought was interesting. I read an article that Harbaugh is petitioning the league to force teams to limit the formations that they use to the ones that are default in Madden, because his players are having trouble trying to figure out the trickery of opposing offenses, and he doesn't think it's fair.
It's a slippery slope to only allow Madden, to then you're only going to allow Tecmo Super Bowl formations.
Well, I mean, that'll be next year when his guys get confused by a reverse handoff. But
I was going to say, you can always call the punt team out and then and line up in punt formation, but throw the ball on the opposing team. That works in Madden.
That is the Rams' best offensive play.
Switching sides to the Colts and their massively overrated quarterback. Our superfan writes in, I couldn't tell the difference in the run game between the Hall of Fame game and the game against the Bills. Hopefully both were the result of field conditions. Witty, I don't think that's the case. I think their run game is going to be really bad. Hopefully the first offensive line unit gets some extended time together in the next couple of weeks to get the run game figured out. Yeah, I think he's got that nailed, because it's when all of your running backs are having trouble moving the ball, the problem's probably with your offensive line. Will Luck play? Could his injuries not be fully healed? I don't suspect that'll be the case, but I'm starting to wonder. I'm starting to wonder about Luck. Like, there comes a point when you got to stop wondering if the guy is a promising young quarterback or if he's now a seasoned veteran that never really panned out. And my argument's with the latter. He's no longer on his rookie deal, so he's no longer a rookie. Defense. Will the defensive line repeat their performance? I don't know what that means, if that's good or bad. And can the offense, or can the outside linebackers make a leap? I'd love to see them get some pressures and sacks this week. That's sad. But you know, that he's just hoping to get a sack. So anyway, the Colts, top to bottom don't look all that great. I actually like our Colts super fans. I can't keep dumping on him when he's not on the podcast to defend himself. But like he implied, I don't like this team, and I resent them very much from 2 years ago. They're lucky to be in the playoffs. They should have been running their mouth. Okay.
All right. Battle of young teams in Florida. It's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Neil.
Yeah, Tampa Bay and Jacksonville, both looking to get the first wins of preseason. Very difficult with Tampa Bay. There's no preview there, but I can tell Tampa Bay fans that the reports are that Noah Spence, their much, much vaunted second round pick from the draft in spring, he's looking pretty good. And as we all know, you can't have enough pass rushers in your team. Otherwise, the only thing of note that I saw was that Evan Spencer, a wide receiver who was drafted by Washington last year, is actually making the odd good play and may get in there somewhere in the rotation, obviously behind Evans and Jackson. In terms of Jacksonville, Jacksonville super fan is super happy. Everything is all good on offense, and his word of the week was continuation. Just keep it going, keep it rolling. The offense looks terrific, both passing and running. In fact, it's looking that good that even left tackle Luke Jokel is playing well, and that is about as rare as the Cleveland Browns being favorites in a game.
Oh, he would come full circle.
Yeah. Jalen Ramsey, he will play for the first time in preseason after being injured. And, of course, they're really looking forward to seeing him. I still think he may well turn out to be the best player from this year's draft and could be a huge difference maker for them. And the other player they got in the draft, Miles Jack, he is, our superfan says, his hair is on fire. Now, I'm not quite sure what that means, whether he's playing really, really well or whether he has that really horrible burning hair smell.
Might be hairline fractures.
Could also be. So there we go. Tampa Bay against Jacksonville. Don't miss it.
So, Pod, if we're having trouble getting content delivered back from our Tampa superfan, should we try and get Miko Grimes to take over?
Well, we should definitely...
Yes, 1,000 times yes.
We should definitely try and get someone to be our Tampa Bay super fan. That's for sure.
I think she's just looking for an outlet. Like, this could work out for everybody.
Yeah. I open invitation. Go ahead and tweet her, Patrick.
She could certainly be a Sunday regular.
I think Ron has a very good working relationship with her, so he should extend that that offer to her.
I don't believe it's a hands-on relationship.
Oh, you guys, very well done. The New Orleans Saints are at your Houston Texans, James.
Yes, it should be a fun experience. From Chris, our Saints fan, he said that the Saints defense had a good showing against the Patriots and will need to continue that against the Texans, even though they lost Stephen Anthony and Sheldon Rankins this past week. There will be a battle in the secondary with Harris and Crawley fighting to make the final roster. And he's also curious to see who steps up at wide receiver and makes some plays. Currently, they have just an abundance of wide receivers that are outshining each other. So this should be the first opportunity to see the full projected week one starters on the offensive line, which is something more than what the Houston Texans can say, because we are going to be missing tackles. We're going to be missing Dwayne Brown for sure. Likely also going to be missing Derek Newton. So segueing nicely into my preview would be if Brock can at least look comfortable behind the offensive line and that the coaching staff is able to continue kind of putting together these offensive lines despite losing parts either to injury or to free agency, as they've done several years in a row now. Next, it's going to be ball security. Throughout training camps, as well as last week, we've had lots of fumbles. And the optimistic point of view was that, well, the Houston defense is just making their running backs look bad by forcing all of these fumbles. San Francisco forced 3 fumbles last week. That's not getting a lot of press because Houston was able to recover all 3 of their own fumbles, as well as both of San Francisco's fumbles. So while I would like to see the fumble luck continue, I would just prefer to hold on to the ball in the first place. Maybe they should check the PSI. Then we also this week signed defensive end Alex Carrington. And so hopefully he will be making his debut. Watt is obviously still out, but we're getting Jadeveon Clowney and Brian Cushing back. Well, we might be getting Jadeveon Clowney back this week. Definitely Brian Cushing. So it'll be good to see what our defense is going to look like with them back. And assuming Alex Carrington pans out, how we're going to look with people playing opposite of Watt.
I can't believe Patrick let you get that PSI comment by without a comment.
I threw a comment in. I was too far away from my microphone for it to show up. But yeah, I didn't let that go unchecked.
I didn't think you would. You're up next here, Patrick. The San Francisco 49ers at the Denver Broncos.
So the 49ers, they've got quarterback issues, right? So Gabbert versus Kapp, that doesn't sound like there's a winner in there, but somebody's got to be the starter. Corners, wow. Okay, so he's got questions at both quarterback and corner. That's not looking great for their chances in the passing league. D-line, be on lookout for number 99, DeForest Buckner, who our superfan says has been a standout in camp, and he wants to see him play. He reminds him of Alden Smith. Hopefully that's in a good way. And the offensive line, again, the offensive line, man, everybody is wondering about their offensive line continuity. He's got the former Pro Bowler Anthony Davis coming back after what he calls a sabbatical. He wants to see him paired with Josh Garnett. Apparently they've been running together on the second team, which, Charlie, our super fan, seems to think that they're just playing them together on the second unit for continuity's sake, and they'll elevate them both at the same time, which is interesting if that's true. For the Broncos, again, lack of a clear number one at quarterback, so they're flipping the script this week. They're having Trevor Siemian play the first quarter, Sanchez to the second, and presumably Paxton Lynch is going to play the second half. That seems perfectly reasonable to me. Second string running back, there's a bunch of junk back there. So that's a pretty legitimate problem. Like if you don't know who your quarterback is and you don't know who your running back is, it doesn't bode well for the offense. Third string wide receiver also up in the air a little bit. He thinks that Latimer is going to take over because Beanie Fowler got himself hurt and he's probably going to lose his job because he's on the bubble anyway. Offensive line, Okung, didn't play all that great. Again, that's not looking good for the offense. Defensive line, Vance Walker was supposed to start for Malik Jackson. They won a three-man rotation with Jared Crick and Adam Gotsis, but Vance tore his ACL. So I guess the unstated implication there is that the defensive line, which is supposed to be the strength of the team, is looking thin, and they want to know who their kick returner and punt returner is going to be. And this is a good time to find out because the second week of the preseason is all about the special teams, in my opinion. And that's Chargers. I'm sorry, that's San Fran Chargers.
A couple of things I wanted to know. The Broncos defense is experiencing a couple of injuries, are they not? Did I see that DeMarcus Ware was hurt?
I guess he's been out for a while.
Could be wrong. I know Derek Wolfe rolled an ankle, but apparently they're not that worried about it at this particular point in time. Trevor Siemian, by the way, will be starting in this game. We got a report on that late, just as we were about to start recording the podcast. And I want to talk a little bit about Kaepernick here. I mean, dealing with a fatigued right shoulder, which is his throwing shoulder. He is righty, correct? He must be. In any case, was all of Kaepernick's success linked to Harbaugh? I mean, it can't be, right? Like, what in the world happened to this kid?
Yeah,
well,
I don't know.
It sounds like scheme changes, right? And number one, like when you say a quarterback can't play because of arm fatigue, like that's an unkind statement to make coming from the team, right? That's got some implications behind it, and there's probably a reason you've never heard that before, right? Because that's implying that this guy's not fit to play quarterback, right? He's not a pitcher. Like, you can't practice during the week and then not play the guy because his arm's too weak, right? That's the implication, is he's got a weak arm. It's not cool. But, I mean, it's Chip Kelly, so what do you really expect? And then, yeah, like, why did his career take a turn when his coach left? He probably had a college coach that was playing around this guy's strengths, which is what you do in college. And then he had a couple of pro systems come in and he didn't quite fit their system. So he's left that hanging out in the cold. That's my guess.
Yeah. I wonder if he kind of backed the wrong person in the Harbaugh versus owners feud there and tried to stick with Harbaugh. But I mean, now that Hasselbeck's out of the league, you know, Kaepernick's the only quarterback with Super Bowl experience that's not a starter right now. And he was one or two, you know, Michael Crabtree fades away from being in back-to-back Super Bowls since we can all remember Richard Sherman, famous, I can't really say downplayed, response to the fades to Michael Crabtree. But, yeah, I mean, that was back when, you know, the Kaepernick versus Russell Wilson was the big, that was going to be the big changing of the guard between Manning and Brady. It was going to go to Wilson and Kaepernick. It's so bad for Kaepernick. He can't have a good relationship in San Francisco when he was legitimately looking for a trade to Cleveland.
Yeah.
That's a good point. But I was afraid you were going to say something about his off-field relationships in San Francisco. My gosh. Talk about throwing out unwarranted news items, James.
Are we gonna just speculate? Because I want to do that. I want to talk about was it Alden Smith? Who was it that like went crazy and like drove a car into his house or something?
Sounds about right.
T-boned his car is what it was.
We have one last game. You can tell we're getting a little punch drunk. It's the Kansas City Chiefs at the Los Angeles Rams of St. Louis. The Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. Not once, but twice now. What's up, Neil?
Well, talking about drunk, Jay, Nick gave a good report, a preview on the Kansas City Chiefs. he's certainly looking to see if his O-line can withstand the test of the Rams' very powerful front four, especially at the guard position where Parker Ehinger and, here we go again, it's Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, the two guards, are looking to put in some strong performances, and let's hope so for the whole of France. They're also looking at Tyreek Hill, wide receiver, who is, although he has some pretty horrible off-field baggage that he's carrying around with him, he is the fastest guy on the Chiefs roster, and he's certainly getting some first-team reps. And Nick's hoping that, for once, the Chiefs will get a guy with speed and good hands at the wide receiver position, so keep an eye on him.
His hands are great at wrapping around people's necks, and his baggage is heavy because that's where he puts the bodies.
There you go. Great grip.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly. Okay,
oh, my God. Yeah. Right. And over to the Rams now. And, of course, as per last week, it's all about Jared Goff and whether he can lead the Rams to a very successful 7-9 season. He certainly played two series last week. And he looked so, but I guess for them it's all about just bringing him along slowly and trying to get him ready for that first game of the season. Our Rams superfan, he's keen to see him play half a game this week. And we'll see what happens there. In terms of the defense, it's all very vanilla, of course, as it is with most teams at the moment, where they're not really showing anything exotic, no real blitzes. And they're looking to see if their fundamentals can be better after a bit of a shoddy showing against the Dallas Cowboys last week. And finally, just to report that my favorite wide receiver in the NFL, Faro Cooper, he had no catches, which is rather disappointing. Hopefully he'll get onto the field this week and do something quite good for the Rams. Good luck, Faro.
So we started the show talking about the billions of dollars the NFL and ESPN has exchanged hands. And last week, I could not believe the hype train ESPN put on the preseason game, the return to the Coliseum. It was like it was the Super Bowl. I mean, people literally said words, it's like the Super Bowl. It was preseason week one. It was the most ridiculous thing I've seen on television. Well, maybe not the most ridiculous, but pretty close. Now, as I'm reading this here from Alden Gonzalez, Sean Mannion apparently had a great game for those Los Angeles Rams of St. Louis, and will continue to get significant reps behind Case Keenum and Jared Goff, and my favorite coach, and by favorite, I mean not my favorite, Jeff Fisher says, quote, "We knew Sean could do some good things, and it showed the other night. It's an exciting room for those guys. As far as Sean moving up and all that, we've got a plan. It has to fall into place." This is ridiculous. So now we're stealing the Broncos storylines. It feels like wrestling to me. Let's take the storyline from that team, put it on this team, because we're in Los Angeles and we have to make this team work. This is out. I am so sick. I know I've listed all the teams I hate. I now hate the Los Angeles Rams for no reason other than they're in Los Angeles.
They're too boring to hate.
Mm. I mean, Sean Mannion is such a big name. He will not be buried on this depth chart, Pod. I mean, how can you possibly hold him back?
It's Sean Mannion and Trevor Siemian, the two guys you've never heard before that are going to be starters in the NFL this year, and people are going to go gaga, and they're going to immediately realize there's a reason why we've never heard of them before.
I think the most outlandish thing from that report is that Jeff Fisher has a plan.
Well, we all know he knows how long a football game is. Thank you, Patrick, for joining us on today's show. You're not the only one that has to drop. I think we all do. So I will leave everyone with the instructions on what we'd like them to do, and that is send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast, and of course you can read all the what to watch fors in detail, because we only gave you slight bit and pieces of what the super fans wrote. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Of course, you can search Next Fan Up in your search bar on Facebook, and our page will pop right open for you. We want you to go to iTunes, of course, subscribe to the show. That way you can't miss any of our programs, including our very special draft podcast, which was posted just yesterday. All during the month of June, we've already done a season preview for every single division in the NFL. So you can go back and check those and enjoy those particular podcasts. And like I said, when you're on iTunes, you can leave us a review, just like so many others have done before you. I'm going there right now to see if anyone's left us a recent review. And no, they haven't. Raider Rodney, still the last one who's left us a review, saying Pod is the man despite his homerism. So there you go. Neil, James, thank you very much for joining us on the Thursday preview. I'm sure Nick will enjoy hearing about his drunkenness on this show, Neil.
Well, you know, Jay, it's the first step to recovery.
So tune in to Drunken Nick on Sunday for the recap of the preseason games. And if it's not Drunken Nick, there will be super fans and they will do a recap show for you, talking about what they saw in preseason week two, and maybe give you a little taste about what they expect to see coming up in preseason week three. And we will be back here. I will be back here next Wednesday, with a very special guest that I cannot promote because I refuse to promote a show 1 week out, because you never know when a guest will back out, and then I got to find another guest, and it just becomes a big mess. But I will be back on Wednesday with an interview with a guest, and then the super fans and I will rejoin on Thursday to preview preseason week three. So with all of that, I leave you with the immortal words of Jeff Fisher, and there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.